All right, well, good morning, everyone. I'd like to welcome everyone to this special session on linking physiology to management. My name is John Snyder. I'm an assistant professor at the University of Georgia, and I'll be serving as the moderator for this session. And before I get started, I'd like to just kind of introduce with, kind of what we've been doing with these special sessions over the past few years. So many of you are probably familiar with the 1986 book on cotton physiology, a very comprehensive work, and then also in 2010, Physiology of Cotton. And then starting really with the 2010 special session on stress physiology in cotton, that kind of served as the foundation for what ultimately would be the Stress Physiology in Cotton book in 2011. So today we'll have four talks on topics that fall under the heading linking physiology to management, and so you'll hear a little bit about that, and then we'll go on into later on in the year. Obviously, we have authors that will add additional chapters to this, and it'll form the basis for a book, okay, of the same title. So Stress Physiology in Cotton in 2011, Flowering and Fruiting in 2012. There's a current book in the works, Seeds and Seedlings, and then, of course, this one on linking physiology to management. So today, what I'd like to talk to you about is plant-based irrigation scheduling. So first things first, and I know that many of you, if you were at the talks yesterday, you've heard a lot of the same arguments over and over and over, and so you're going to hear them again, of course. But ultimately, irrigation is a necessity in arid regions because of high evaporative demand and low rainfall. So you've got these conflicting things. So you can see general patterns of rainfall. So in the desert southwest there, you can see very low rainfall, and that's coupled with a high water requirement in those regions for cotton. So in southern Georgia, for example, 46 centimeters a year, you can produce a pretty good crop in southern Georgia. That to produce that same crop in the desert southwest, you'll need more than double the water. So the need for irrigation in arid regions is pretty obvious. Now, in the southeast, we have the opposite situation, where we have low water requirements, high rainfall. The majority of acres are dry land acres, if we can use that term loosely, but dry land acres. And cotton is generally considered drought tolerant. The other thing is, last year's yield was 1,095 pounds of lint per acre, with the majority of acres being dry land. So, there the question comes up, why irrigate? And so I've heard these questions before, and one of the big reasons is that there's year-to-year variability in yield. Last year was not a typical year for yield in Georgia, and having that supplemental irrigation does, in fact, decrease year-to-year variability. Now, obviously, year-to-year variability in yield is not solely governed by water availability. There are other factors, such as temperature and many other factors that come into play there. But definitely, having supplemental irrigation does decrease year-to-year variability in yield. Also, it decreases some of the risks associated with production and allows farmers to maintain profits. So the need for improved irrigation efficiency. So water is a finite resource, and irrigation accounts for about 70% of global fresh water use. There's competition for this resource. There's environmental concerns with over-irrigating, such as nutrient leaching and runoff and reduced stream flows. And then, importantly for the farmer and practical considerations, it takes money to pump that water out of the ground, and you can decrease the productivity of cotton by over-irrigating. So, crop water use. We talk about crop water use. In general, we're talking about total water loss from the crop through the combined processes of transpiration and evaporation. This is determined using lysimeters, And then the other parameter that I'll talk about is reference of apotranspiration. So this is a hypothetical value of a uniformly grassy field covering completely covering the ground. And you can calculate reference ET from climatic variables. So given that information, if I were a farmer, and I'm a cotton farmer, I may not particularly care about the evapotranspiration of a uniformly grassy field that covers the, you know, anyway, all these parameters, right? However, reference ET can be calculated from those weather data and related to crop water use by the crop coefficient. So this is crop and growth stage specific. And then if you know the crop water use, you can couple that information with information on the amount of soil that's available in the soil reservoir, so that readily available water. So that, if you know that and you can estimate rooting depth, you can estimate when your crop needs to be irrigated and how much to apply as well. So there's also a simplified checkbook approach in southern Georgia. This is even more simplified. It is simply saying that on a given week of development for the cotton crop, it needs a certain amount of water. If we receive rainfall, we subtract that from that amount and supply the difference with irrigation. All right, soil moisture sensors. These are other options in terms of irrigation scheduling by actually measuring soil moisture. There's different types, both those that measure water content and water potential. But one of the arguments for plant-based approaches is that we know that there's variability, for one, obviously, in atmospheric conditions, all of these parameters that governs the crop water use, or that is one factor that governs crop water use. There's soil factors. It's not just determined by soil texture, all right? There's also soil organic matter, soil structure, rooting depth. All of these things will actually influence the amount of water that's available to that plant. And then the plant itself. So how much leaf area is transpiring out there? Stomatal characteristics. I heard someone bring that up yesterday in terms of the different crops and stomatal characteristics and how that will influence crop water use. There's so many different factors that come together ultimately to influence the water demand of that crop. And the cotton plant integrates all these factors into a water status, let's say. So it makes sense to utilize the plant's ability to integrate all of these factors and use that to make management decisions. I've heard this at multiple meetings. I just had, you know, I've had to put this up here. Usually I let it go and sometimes I don't. But we know how to irrigate. I can look at the crop and tell you it needs water. So you know, essentially that's saying, well, we don't really need you. you're out of a job. There's no need for you. But if you can look at a crop and tell me that it needs water, then you're probably too late. You've probably lost at least some yield at that point. Okay. And so I hear this many, many times. Like I say, sometimes I let it go. But anyway, you've probably lost yield at that point. Measures of plant water status, direct measures, water potential, and water content are ways that you can measure water status. So relative water content, I'm not going to talk much about that today. It's just fairly low tech, of course, but you need a scale and a dryer and something to float the leaf discs on to get a turgid weight. Water potential is measured with psychrometers and out in the field very often with pressure chambers. And then indirect measures. So indirect is the plant response to that change in water status. Growth inhibition, turgor pressure changes, stomatal conductance, transpiration, canopy temperature, all of these are indirect measures of crop response. Well, they're indirect measures of plant water status. All right, so direct methods, minimum leaf water potential, and I understand there is a lot of information out there on this, so if your paper or your slide is not included in this, there's no reason to get your feelings hurt or anything. There's a lot of information. There's certain ones that will be excluded from the slide. The book chapter, obviously, will be more comprehensive. So minimum leaf water potential is typically measured between 12 noon and 3 o'clock. So the Grimes and Yamada paper here shows some of the diurnal changes, and you see a stable measurement time occurring during the pre-dawn hours, and then you also see a stable measurement time, like I say, occurring in that afternoon period, and that's where you would expect to see the most stress as well. This correlates with main stem elongation, fiber growth, so both fiber length, fiber elongation, and fiber weight increase, photosynthesis, bowl retention, and then also, and this is of course a busier slide now, but it correlates with yield and it has been successfully used to schedule irrigation. So what are some of the downsides? Obviously, it requires manual readings, going out with a pressure chamber and doing these measurements, and it is sensitive to climatic factors. So even in this paper, regions having substantial variability in cloud cover would not be suitable for these types of measurements, these midday measurements. And one of the things that we have a lot of, in at least in southern Georgia and probably a lot of areas of the southeast, is a lot of cloud cover. It seems to move in right at, you know, 12 o'clock and then kind of hang around for the duration. So anyhow, so this is one of those things that you have to consider. And then pre-dawn water potential. It's considered one of the best available measures of crop water status, and it has been used for irrigation scheduling, especially in tree species. It represents the water potential of the soil in contact with the roots, question mark. That's one of those things that in recent years we found that, you know, plants do transpire at night and the plant may not necessarily reach equilibrium with the soil. But one of the things that I would say is that pre-dawn water potential represents that maximum leaf water potential. And again, it's not as impacted by other climatic factors that you would experience during midday. It is correlated with bowl abscission, leaf abscission, leaf gas exchange, and plant growth, so stem elongation, leaf area development. And there are some cons associated with this method. The one, obviously, it is a manual reading, as with most of your direct methods, and it's an inconvenient measurement time. So now if you like getting up early in the morning, then it's probably fine for you. But so for me, my research site is about an hour away, and we start about 4 o'clock in the morning. So, you know, you have to get up before that to get there at four. So it's, you know, it's one of those things. It's an inconvenient measurement time, but it is a pretty good measure of crop water status. So here's a generalized response. Well, let me, indirect methods. What we've got here is, you know, this is the plant response to water deficit. Cell expansion processes are typically the most sensitive processes. And then, of course, you've got all these other physiological responses. But stomatal conductance, even though you see a wide range here, is generally in cotton considered more sensitive. You have stomatal closure well before you have declines in photosynthesis. And and also, the cell expansion processes, because they're so sensitive, you can use changes in cell expansion type processes like stem diameter. There was a very good talk yesterday on this. You can use that, plant height measurements, to estimate the need for irrigation. This is just some quick images that I pulled as far as fruit diameter, some of the work that's been done with fruit trees and that type of thing. And then all the other measurements we've already talked about, but this turgor pressure sensor I thought was pretty interesting. There's a few papers on this. They're basically a couple of magnets that you set on each side of the leaf, and you can monitor diurnal changes in turgor pressure and set some threshold values for that. So anyway, I thought that was interesting. I don't know about its deployment in cotton, but anyhow, other responses, again, I'll skim through some of these. Transpiration and stomatal conductance, you can measure those obviously with some of these handheld measurement devices, diffusion pyrometer, infrared gas analyzers, you can estimate using sap flow sensors. And then stomatal conductance and temperature. Again, this is not the first author to demonstrate a relationship between stomatal conductance and temperature. However, you can see that there is that relationship. As those stomata close, you have less evaporative cooling, and ultimately the canopy temperature increases relative to the air temperature. This is kind of a messy graph over here, but on my right-hand side here, you can see leaf to air, well, if you look on the x-axis, leaf to air temperature difference as it relates to stomatal conductance. So as I said, that's not, obviously those aren't the first individuals who have shown this, but this information was used quite a while back, and it was recognized that if the leaf minus the air temperature difference was positive, then the plant was under some level of stress. All right, so this led to this stress degree day concept, and then some level of normalization for diurnal fluctuations under any given air temperature. And then the main thing that you need to understand about this is it's pretty straightforward. It assumes water stress when that canopy minus air temperature deficit is positive. But it was recognized that you can have water deficit stress even when that canopy minus air temperature deficit is negative, because it's affected by vapor pressure deficit as well. So this was the crop water stress index approach. You can see the linear response of canopy minus air temperature difference to vapor pressure deficit. So this allowed for the calculation of a few key parameters that are used to determine this crop water stress index. So TC down here, this is the canopy temperature that you actually measure. All right, the non-water stressed leaf to air temperature difference, that's approximated or calculated according to this line. This T dry parameter, this is a hypothetical leaf to air temperature difference of a non-transpiring canopy. And you can also approximate that from the well-watered baseline by extending into the negative VPD to abolish that leaf to air, well, the transpiration that occurs even when you're under a zero vapor pressure deficit. All right, so using that information, there was some work that was done in cotton showing that, you know, if you withheld water, you can see that there's some deviations from that well-watered baseline. So this represents some deviation from the well-watered baseline. So these are crops that are not transpiring at their potential rate. And then there's the correlation between water potential and the crop water stress index. Another approach is a stress time approach. I noticed the authors don't show up down there. But anyway, a stress time approach, and this specifies the time per day that canopy temperatures have to exceed a defined high temperature threshold for irrigation to be triggered. So the cotton crop has a certain temperature optima. It's actually a range. We know that this is a range, but in general, for scheduling purposes, a value of 28 degrees C has been used. And a certain number of hours in the day that the crop is above that temperature has been used to schedule irrigation in cotton. All right, now this is very busy, and I don't, you guys have to read every last bit of this. Hopefully everyone, well, not everyone, but maybe you had a chance to see Daryl's poster yesterday on scheduling irrigation using pre-dawn water potential. So in southern Georgia, I mentioned many of the issues associated with some of the methods. And in southern Georgia, obviously the pre-dawn water potential, if I wanted to schedule based on an actual measure of crop water status, that'll give me an actual measure of crop water status. And it's not subject to variability due to cloud cover and all of that. So in this study, we had five different irrigation treatments. Two of them were the checkbook. One of them was the checkbook method I mentioned earlier. One of them was the dryland treatment, and then there were three pre-dawn water potential treatments. There's plenty of other details, of course, but I'm just going to get into the data here just to save time and have at least some time for questions. These are the seasonal trends in pre-dawn water potential here. There will be days that you can't go out and get a measurement, maybe because you're getting rained on. I mean, that's probably one of the only limitations for this methodology. Canopy temperature, you can see throughout the season, the canopy to air temperature difference. And then if you look at the average, so we had a very wet year in Georgia. If I had rain out shelters, this would work perfectly, I'm sure. But we had a very wet year in Georgia. You can see that if you look at our threshold values, right, this is just the average. There's a lot of ways to treat data. But if I average each plot throughout the growing season and then analyze for the treatment effect, There's no treatment effect here. All of them had pretty high water potentials throughout the growing season. And this is the well-watered baseline that we derived. Now, there's each data point actually represents 8 replicate plots on a given day. So there's a lot more data in this graph than it shows. And I had to go through and exclude certain data points based on, and that is a limitation, based on solar radiation values being less than 600 watts per meter squared. So I had to use some sort of parameter to make sure that, you know, all the data, that I was treating the data equally. But this well-watered baseline, you can see a nice response to vapor pressure deficit here, and this allows for our calculation of those parameters that I discussed earlier for the crop water stress index. Now you can see the means in relation to zero water stress. Ultimately, there was really no water stress throughout the growing season for these treatments, for any of the treatments. Plant heights showing similar trend throughout the season. No difference in plant height, but there was a difference in the amount of water applied. So the checkbook approach was calling for us to irrigate at certain times throughout the season when our other approaches were telling us not to. We received a substantial amount of rainfall during the season. You can see we got 66.9 centimeters. I told you we needed 46 throughout the season. Now, obviously, we know it's the distribution of that rainfall throughout the season that really matters. So similar to our water potential measurements and all our other treatments and what they were telling us, there's no difference in seed cotton or lint yields. And water use efficiency was positively affected. Now, I know someone's going to point out the dry land treatment over here and say, well, we just don't need to irrigate. Well, obviously, we had a very wet year here, but our higher thresholds resulted in greater water use efficiency. So I think the potential exists for improving irrigation efficiency or improving our water use efficiency with these approaches. So anyway, with that, I'll go ahead and open it up to questions. Yes? Oh yes, yeah. Oh yeah, I used the same leaf that I would use for the midday readings, that fourth main, well, the uppermost fully expanded leaf. So it was the same across the board. Even though theoretically I guess everything should equilibrate, we talked about some of those issues with equilibration and all that, I just used the same leaf across the board. Yeah. Yes.
But you had one.
And yes.
If I remember it correctly, there are no temperatures on there of 28 degrees
C. Sure. 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 I knew this question was going to come up, and I knew who was going to ask it too. So, but that's right. I understand that. That's the interesting thing is, if you look at it, we're above that 28 for the majority of the season. One of the things I didn't indicate there, obviously, is the time of day. If you looked at that temperature data, when was that derived from, right? That was between 12 and 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So I didn't mention that for one thing, right? So the plant, for one thing, there's diurnal variation. There's going to be a point during the day that it will actually see temperatures less than 28. That's not what you're getting at. What you're saying is when we're measuring that stress, generally you don't see leaf temperatures that are lower than 28. I understand that. There is, and that's why I mentioned there's a range. There's a range that's probably that's above that 28 and all the way down to, what, 25. I think that's the number that's often quoted. So you pick a number, and you say however much time I accumulate above this, stress minutes, if you want to call it that, or hours or whatever, then I can trigger an irrigation. And I think that's what it's being used for. It's a good question, though.